I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is the true story of a military wife, her irresistible husband, and a series of lust-filled affairs that threatens to drive them apart. It's a story of seductive power.
He outranks her. There's something about his swagger that's very sexy.
Multiple deceptions.
Every day he's telling his wife he loves her. Every day he's telling his girlfriend he loves her.
And unbridled jealousy.
They found blood throughout the apartment. Blood all over the floor. Bloody knife. It's a murder weapon.
Beware. Extreme passion can lead to shocking consequences. With quaint canals running through the city, Fort Lauderdale, Florida is sometimes called the Venice of America. Surrounded by stunning beaches awash in golden sunlight, it's the perfect place to be in love. In 2001, the city makes the ideal backdrop for Jennifer and Fred Trayers as they celebrate their 9th wedding anniversary.
Fred and Jennifer's life in Fort Lauderdale would seem to be the picture-perfect marriage.
Jennifer's attractive, petite, and a wallflower.
She kind of struck me as a shy person. Always had a happy look on her face. She really liked life and liked her marriage.
But while Jennifer may seem demure to outsiders, there's one thing that she's not shy about at all. Her devotion to her husband, Fred.
Fred was a very thin guy, muscular though, very strong. I think a woman would find Fred Trayers attractive.
Fred was the center of Jennifer's world. She put her life on hold to follow him everywhere they went.
A Navy pilot, Fred's a classic overachiever. His confidence and drive take him from one competitive career straight into the next.
Anybody who can go to the Navy and become a pilot and then totally switch gears and become a doctor, that's just amazing to me.
So in August of 2001, when Fred's latest venture takes him to medical school, Jennifer heads back to work.
Jennifer is working at a timeshare company to help put Fred through medical school.
It's a job she doesn't enjoy, but it's all for Fred.
This is very common for somebody who is a Navy wife. They're very dedicated. It's almost the woman behind the man.
During their first few months in Fort Lauderdale, Jennifer and Fred slip into a comfortable new life. With Jennifer working full-time, Fred dives into the rigors of medical school. It's not long before he starts to meet new, like-minded students. And sure enough, soon after starting school, Fred meets an attractive, brilliant medical student. Her name is Danielle.
Danielle was more of a talker than Jennifer. She was obviously a very intelligent girl.
She was pretty, she was athletic.
And unlike Fred's dedicated but domesticated wife, Danielle is bubbling with ambition.
They would talk about different things than Jennifer and Fred would talk about. He was very much into intellectual women, someone he could really communicate with.
He found somebody who was like him, smart, sexy, and especially if you have a big ego, getting recognized and noticed by new and attractive women is a big high.
Good to meet you.
See you around.
Yeah.
Fred's not shy about his new friendship with Danielle, and his wife is less than thrilled. Jennifer knows Fred's a catch. And now she worries whether Danielle sees him that way too. The seeds of jealousy begin to blossom under Jennifer's cheerful exterior.
Something was brewing in the marriage. Things weren't right. And Jennifer sat at home thinking, what's wrong? Why isn't he coming home? And he would say, I'm just hanging out with Danielle. And he acted a little distant.
Now, Jennifer may be shy and introverted, but she's not stupid. And a woman knows when the man she loves is interested in somebody else.
Just when Jennifer thinks things are bad enough, Fred comes home with an announcement. He tells her he's going camping with a friend, Danielle.
Fred took Danielle on this hiking trip to Wyoming and didn't really invite Jennifer. So Jennifer did not go, didn't force the issue, but she was really bothered by that. That really hurt her feelings a lot that he would go off on a camping trip with some other woman.
Over the next several months, Jennifer's suspicions go into overdrive. She worries that the man she sacrificed for is betraying her.
Things are tense, and Jennifer's like, what's going on with these two? She thinks, wow, they must be having an affair.
Jennifer, at this point, is really jealous of Danielle, is really focused and almost obsessed. And she can't get this image out of her mind of her husband sleeping with this other woman.
Little does Jennifer know, it's an image of infidelity that will haunt her for years to come. At work, Jennifer can't concentrate. In her hurt and loneliness, she reaches out to a married coworker. His name is Orville.
Jennifer and Orville started out as friends, just having lunches.
I think Jennifer saw in Orville someone she could talk to. She was really going through a lot at that point. Jennifer would confide in Orville with some of the issues she was having with Fred, like, you know, I don't think he's being faithful to me. Orville was one of those guys who was like, you don't have to put up with that, Jennifer.
As the two get closer, the married co-workers are tempted to take their friendship to the next level. And then one day, their emotional intimacy crosses over into dangerous territory.
It wasn't just a peck. It was a passionate kiss.
With Jennifer, it began as an emotional attachment to Orville, and the physical aspect of the relationship then took over.
A few days later, the two make a rendezvous at a hotel room where they commit the ultimate betrayal.
It was absolutely a physical affair between Jennifer and Orville.
The illicit and all-consuming sex with Orville does the trick. During her night of passion, Jennifer finds herself worlds away from her obsessive thoughts about Fred and Danielle.
She's looking for sex as a way to get love.
She's very seduced by his kindness. It's something that Jennifer hasn't had in a very long time.
That was one of those places in her life where she kind of said to herself, wow, you know, there's another guy who's really interested in me, who likes me for who I am.
But there's an undertone that's deadly serious.
I think underneath the affair for Jennifer with Orville, that she may not be entirely conscious of, is the I'll get you back, Fred.
After nearly a decade of marriage, things are falling apart. But adultery can be a dangerous game, and for this picture-perfect couple, suspicion and lust has put them on a collision course with a deadly finale. It's early 2003 in sunny Fort Lauderdale, and jealousy has Jennifer in its grip. Suspecting her husband, Fred, of having an affair, Jennifer is cheating on him with a married man. The illicit affair has given her everything Fred hasn't, both sexually and emotionally. And she wants more.
Here was a man at work who was telling her good things about herself. He would treat her like a girlfriend, essentially.
As the months pass, Jennifer leads two lives. A lonely Navy wife who believes her husband is betraying her. And a ravenous adulteress fulfilling all her own needs. But on a warm spring day in 2003, it's all about to come to a crashing halt.
Hello?
That afternoon, while at home between classes, Fred gets a shocking phone call.
Okay.
It's Orville's wife. She tells Fred she knows what's been going on between their spouses.
Who is that?
Orville's wife found out somehow.
Orville's wife?
She actually called Fred and told Fred about it. Then Fred confronted Jennifer about it.
When Jennifer realizes her affair has been exposed, she braces herself for Fred's reaction. But instead of becoming outraged, Fred confronts Jennifer in an unexpected way.
He started crying and he told Jennifer, "This is all my fault."
He took the blame on himself and said, "You know, I know I haven't been around. I know I've been ignoring you. I haven't been paying enough attention to you."
For the Treyers, their mutual admissions signal a moment of truth. They can dissolve their marriage or try to make it right. Fred promises to stop seeing Danielle. In turn, Jennifer promises to break it off with Orville.
Both Fred and Jennifer had an understanding they were not going to see either Orville or Danielle again.
I love you so much.
I love you too.
After cutting Danielle and Orville out of their lives, Fred and Jennifer's marriage seems stronger than ever. And in early 2010, the couple moves to San Diego, where they dream of starting fresh.
San Diego is very much a military town. We have the Navy here, we have the Marines here. It's very much a part of the fabric of life in San Diego.
Jennifer loved it in San Diego. Everything was kind of behind them, so to speak, and Fred was a doctor now. He's had a great future ahead of them.
The objects of their cheating desires, Danielle and Orville, are now literally on the other side of the continent. But under the surface, Jennifer and Fred may not have left the past behind them.
There is a fantasy for Jennifer and Fred. If you switch locations, then you can have a fresh start. Sometimes that's the case, and other times it's not the case.
But for the Treyers, there's no time to find out. After less than a year in San Diego, Fred gets a new medical assignment on a floating humanitarian hospital.
The Mercy was a Navy ship whose mission was to provide medical care around the globe.
On board the USNS Mercy in the South Pacific, Fred is now thousands of miles away from Jennifer and their newly committed marriage. Within just days, familiar old urges rise back up to the surface. One of Fred's closest co-workers just happens to be a beautiful junior-ranking doctor. At 30 years old, she's a decade younger than Fred. Coincidentally, she has the same name as the woman Jennifer thought Fred was messing around with in Florida, Danielle.
Danielle was younger than Fred. She was pretty. She's blonde.
Danielle's a very attractive woman, very small, petite girl, very attractive face.
A few days after they first lay eyes on each other, Danielle and Fred find themselves sitting together at dinner.
One night on the Mercy, Fred just happened to be seated at the same table with Danielle. They started talking that night and it sort of began a really intense friendship.
Danielle seems to have it all. Looks, brains, a military background. A former Marine, she's Fred's perfect companion on the long assignment.
I think Fred really yearned for an emotional connection that he just wasn't getting with his wife. But more than that, I think he was pretty excited to have a younger, pretty woman paying him a lot of attention.
And Danielle is dazzled by the handsome top doctor.
Danielle is very drawn to Fred because he's successful, he has status, he outranks her, and there's something about his swagger that's very sexy.
The lines were blurred due to mutual attraction, and it became apparent quickly that they were both interested in one another.
Fred knows if he allows his intensifying friendship with Danielle to progress, he's taking a huge risk.
The military has strict rules on what they call fraternization. Officers are not allowed to date subordinates.
You cannot have sex with a married person while you're in the military. There's actually a crime in the U.S. military code regarding adultery. That's a huge no-no in the military. It can get you kicked out.
But being in close confines only strengthens the magnetic pull between them.
Even though on one level, Fred and Danielle knew they could risk everything by being together, it's almost like those factors don't matter.
Finally, a few weeks later, when the USNS Mercy docks in Guam, their mutual attraction reaches a tipping point.
Guam was sort of like a relaxation place for a couple days where they could just hang out. So they all went to a bar, and after they had a couple drinks and they were walking back to the ship, they stopped.
In that moment, it's very powerful because still a lot is left to the imagination. It's just a kiss after all, but it's a kiss with potential. It's a kiss with lots of possibilities.
But as the kiss threatens to open the floodgates of intense passions, the risks for Fred mount. After 7 years of calm following his wife Jennifer's stormy affair with Orville and the affair Jennifer suspected Fred of having in Florida, Fred's life is growing dangerously complicated again.
With this one kiss, Fred was opening up the door to more tragedy than he could possibly imagine.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns. Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It's late August 2010, and married naval doctor Fred Trayers is stationed in the South Pacific. After a month-long flirtation, Fred and his fellow doctor, Danielle, have just shared a passionate kiss. But before things can progress any further, Fred's assignment on the USNS Mercy comes to an end. In September of 2010, Fred rotates back home to San Diego and to his wife, Jennifer.
Fred came back, went back to his job, back at home with Jennifer, and sort of picked up where he had left off before he went on the Mercy.
but fate can be a funny thing. A few days later, Danielle is sent back to the States too. And of all the Navy hospitals in the country, she's assigned to one in San Diego, just a few miles from the Trayers. Now back on land and living so close to each other, the two doctors' attraction becomes an obsession. So far, they've exchanged just one unforgettable kiss, and neither wants to stop there.
Fred and Danielle came back, and within a week, they were communicating.
They were emailing each other daily. They were texting each other daily. They were calling each other daily.
Fred's completely distracted by lust, and it's not going unnoticed.
Jennifer starts getting suspicious because he's home, he's got his phone in his hand, he's constantly going to the bathroom, the office, and she's assuming, you know what, he's answering a text or sending a text. He won't let go of the thing.
Who's that?
It was the same situation she had been in back in Florida with the other Danielle. So she's starting to have this woman's intuition that something's not right, my husband's not telling me the truth.
With Jennifer again in the throes of doubt about her husband's faithfulness, Fred doesn't do anything to prove her wrong. And sure enough, in the fall of 2010, less than a month after Danielle's arrival, the two reunite with clear intentions.
So right around the 1st of October, the big day comes.
The moment they lay eyes on each other, a flood of pent-up desire is finally released.
It was really the first opportunity for them to spend the night together with no one else around.
This is a day of purely romantic activity. They were kissing, clothes came off.
This time, Fred and Danielle don't hold back. For the two, it's the first chance to touch and be touched, body and heart. And for the rest of the day and following night, the brand new lovers are inseparable.
At that moment in time, Fred and Danielle really felt they had something that was worth losing everything over. There's an undeniable intensity when it comes to Fred and Danielle being together. It's like every single moment is appreciated. They don't take anything for granted. For Fred, it is very hot. He is very excited and enamored by this person who he considers his perfect love.
By the end of the 24-hour rendezvous, they can finally confess their true feelings for each other.
They told each other that they loved each other. Fred was the first one to say it. Fred was in love with Danielle.
Only a few days pass before they start planning a future together, a future with Fred's wife out of the picture for good. For Danielle, the weeks of flirting on the ship, the intense email love affair, and their romantic night together mean only one thing. It's time for the future to begin now. Soon after their first tryst in Danielle's room, Fred receives an email from her thinking it's another love letter. But he's perplexed by what she's written.
Dear Mrs. Wonderful, this letter may come as a surprise to you.
Even though she sent it to her boyfriend, Fred, it was actually worded like she was saying it to Jennifer. And basically saying, you know, you don't know how good you have it with this fine man.
The email ends on an ominous note.
I guess the point of this stupid letter is to remind you how lucky you are. You should let him go. There are so many of us that missed all the good ones. So if you are hoarding a good one, that is rather unkind of you. Sincerely, little Miss Grass is not greener on my side.
It's almost like she's showing off. And in a way, it's like Danielle's being seductive. Danielle was almost writing a letter resume on her behalf, basically stating, look, I can really replace your wife. I'll think you're wonderful too. Let's just go for it.
Fred doesn't know quite what to make of the email. On the one hand, it's loving yet possessive words boost his ego. On the other hand, he's beginning to feel pressured by Danielle to leave his wife Jennifer. Fred knows if Jennifer ever got a hold of this email, the entire situation would explode. But what Fred doesn't realize is that the fuse has already been lit. There's another pair of eyes reading their email. Jennifer's. His wife knows everything. 2 weeks before Danielle sent the email, Fred's first night with her did not go unnoticed.
We got home early the next morning, and Jennifer was pretty upset about that.
So Jennifer decided to do something about it.
Jennifer was trying to figure out who was Fred communicating with. She ends up downloading a spyware program onto his laptop and also onto the desktop computer in his office.
The spyware runs undetected on Fred's computer, secretly sending all of Fred and Danielle's emails to Jennifer.
All of these many, many texts became apparent to Jennifer, all of the emails.
When they arrive in Jennifer's inbox, she's shocked to read the return address. Fred's been cheating on her with someone who has the same first name as the woman she suspected he had an affair with years ago, Danielle.
I can't even imagine how she must have felt when she read that. Probably just really, really sick to her stomach.
Jennifer probably feels like, oh my God, my worst fear has been confirmed. And somebody does love my husband, and my husband does love somebody else, and everything I was feeling was correct.
Now, having spent a few weeks collecting a trove of passionate emails between her husband and another woman, Jennifer discovers Danielle's Dear Mrs. Wonderful email, and it hits her like a body blow.
That was like a kind of a personal attack that Jennifer felt. It just breaks her heart.
They'd been down this road before, and she was devastated.
She was getting angry that this woman was trying to steal her husband, ruin her marriage, and Danielle became an adversary.
Jennifer never tells Fred about the emails, but he begins to feel her suspicion, and the pressures on him build.
She actually asked him about it a couple times, and he said, oh, you're silly, you know, there's nothing going on. I'm the same Fred as I always was. It wasn't what she wanted to hear. She just wanted to know the truth.
But the truth is not something Fred's willing to confess.
I've been waiting for you for hours. Where the heck have you been?
He keeps playing both sides while looking for some way out of the corner he's painted himself into.
Danielle was starting to aggressively tell Fred, look, make a decision. Don't string me along.
Stop trying. Just make it happen.
Feeling trapped, Fred suddenly blurts out the one thing every mistress dreads. Hearing from her lover.
And the only way that he could buy time was to tell her that Jennifer was pregnant.
She's what?
But little does Danielle know, Jennifer is not pregnant. Fred is lying. Again.
He had to find a way to tell her to back off. It's also a slap in the face. It's a little sadistic. Because here he is telling Danielle, you're the love of my life. I want to be with you, but yet in his manipulation, he's saying, but I'm still sleeping with my wife, and my wife is gonna have my baby.
Jennifer told me she's pregnant.
That was devastating news for Danielle to hear. Things changed with Danielle, and I think even more intensely, because she was then even more so after Fred.
I think Fred saw news of the pregnancy as a possible means to cleanly get himself out of that relationship, or so he thought.
Indecision, guilt, lies, deception, anger. For Fred and Jennifer Trayers and Fred's mistress Danielle, they're the volatile ingredients of a toxic love triangle that's about to explode. The fall of 2010 in San Diego, California, and a storm is brewing in Fred and Jennifer Traer's marriage. Jennifer knows everything about her husband's illicit affair with a sultry, smart fellow doctor, Danielle. She's been secretly reading their emails for weeks.
Jennifer is angry because Danielle is threatening her marriage. And she really, at this point, sees Danielle as being responsible for taking her husband's love away from her.
She got angrier and angrier and angrier, not being able to get her husband to admit to what he was doing.
Then there's Danielle, who hates Jennifer for blocking her romantic plans with Fred.
Danielle is also becoming enraged with Jennifer for standing in her way of being with the man she loves.
And finally, there's Fred, the husband who appears capable of using any deception to keep both women in his grasp.
When you play with someone's emotions, you never know what's going to happen.
On December 6, 2010, Central San Diego wakes up to what appears to be an ordinary morning. But around 6:30 a.m., the phone rings at the San Diego Police Department. One of Fred Traer's co-workers reports that Fred has not shown up for work in 48 hours.
It was very unlike Fred not to show up for work. In fact, he was known for being early and staying late. Immediately, a red flag went up.
And the police actually did go over there and knocked on the door.
But there's no answer. An officer heads around back to look through a window and discovers a grisly scene straight out of a horror movie. Two bodies covered in blood lie motionless, one on the bed and one on the floor. The police break a window to get inside.
Initially, police had no idea what they were dealing with. They found in the bedroom blood all over the bed, blood all over the floor, and what appeared to be two deceased individuals.
The man is identified as Fred Traers.
They see Fred first because he's the closest to the bedroom door. He's kind of hunched over on the side of the bed. They realize that he had multiple stab wounds, both on the front of his body and the back. And they checked on him, felt that he had no pulse.
Lying on the bed, the second body is a female. It's Fred's wife, Jennifer.
They pulled up her shirt to realize that she had multiple stab or cut wounds on her chest area as well.
But while Fred isn't breathing, Jennifer still is.
She's alive, she's alive.
She was very, very close to dying. Very close to dying. Slowly, what they call bleeding out.
Ma'am!
With Jennifer about to lose consciousness, the police are quick to question her.
She was not able to verbally communicate.
Tell me what happened.
He asked her, was there a fight? And she nodded her head. He asked her with who.
Jennifer has the strength to move just once.
What happened?
And she gestured towards Fred.
Paramedics rush Jennifer to the ER. She's blacked out and still bleeding.
And they had to pump a lot of blood into her body.
Based on the extent of her injuries, it was clear that someone wanted to end Jennifer's life.
While Jennifer clings to life at the intensive care unit, police return to the bedroom, surveying the bloody scene for clues.
They found two knives in the bedroom. One was a kitchen butcher knife, and one was a military knife. That was Fred's.
They search the house and find no evidence of forced entry or robbery, signs that lead them to believe the brutal stabbings could have been carried out by someone they knew and let into their home. Their next discovery gives them a name, Danielle.
Police, when researching the apartment, found a manila envelope filled with printouts of the text messages and email exchanges. The emails clearly pointed to the presence of another woman.
340 separate emails between Fred and Danielle, and a bunch of the text messages that they had sent to each other. Hundreds and hundreds of text messages.
They could tell right away that there was a relationship going on between him and Danielle.
Police now suspect that a love triangle is at the heart of the blood-soaked bedroom.
In first assessing a crime scene like this, there are many possible motives.
Was there a deadly confrontation between Fred and Jennifer over the affair?
At first, they thought that either Fred had hurt Jennifer or Jennifer had hurt Fred.
Police also consider that Danielle could have attacked Jennifer and then murdered Fred.
Any time when someone's involved in a romantic relationship, the police officers are going to look at the other person dating the married guy. Did they have something to do with this stabbing or not?
The blood trail seems to lead in every direction. Any one of the three could have had motive to take up a knife and unleash their fury. But only one person in the love triangle is unaccounted for, Danielle. And out of hundreds of unearthed emails, one could explain what really happened to Jennifer and Fred.
That email was clearly the message, I'm the last person he's ever going to be with.
It's December 2010, and in San Diego, Fred Trayers, a lieutenant commander in the Navy and surgeon, lies dead in the morgue as his wife Jennifer recovers in the hospital. Both have suffered multiple stab wounds, Fred to his chest and back, Jennifer to her front and wrists.
He had two cuts in his chest, 8 on his back, and 1 in the back of his neck for 11, plus some cuts on his hands, some defensive wounds. The cut in his chest actually went into his heart.
Investigators look squarely at Fred's young and pretty mistress, Danielle.
They wanted to cover all the bases, find out whether, you know, possibly Danielle had somewhat of a role in this. She wanted him to be her boyfriend at least, maybe husband later. And that's always a prime motive to hurt somebody, whether it be Jennifer or Fred.
Detectives discover that Danielle had moved across the country to Silver Spring, Maryland over a month ago. She's stunned to learn her lover has been murdered. But Danielle isn't entirely forthcoming with police.
She said that I can't really essentially be open with you because I'm still in the military.
I'm not quite sure what you mean.
I think she was basically telling the police, in so many words, yes, we messed around, but I can't really tell you that because I don't want to get kicked out of the military.
Based on the hundreds of emails between Danielle and Fred that police found printed out in Fred and Jennifer's home, they now believe Danielle did more than just mess around with Fred. It's clear they were having a full-blown love affair. But Danielle has a surprise for the investigators. She's got a foolproof alibi.
Danielle was clear across the United States when this happened. She was with some friends getting ready to watch a parade. Once the police checked out the alibi, they knew that Danielle had nothing to do with the actual killing.
But Danielle does offer more to the detectives, handing over an ominous email that Jennifer sent to her the morning of December 4th, 2010, just a few hours before Fred's murder. Mimicking Danielle's threatening email that told Jennifer to leave her husband, but was only sent to Fred, Jennifer engages in a furious tit-for-tat.
Dear little miss, grass is not greener on my side.
The email was pages of describing all the things that Jennifer loved about Fred.
But there's a threatening tone to the email that now points to Jennifer as a potential suspect in her husband's murder.
He's already lying to you. You are just a spoiled brat that just wants to steal someone's husband.
The police focus their attention on the very last couple of lines.
I got to feel his soft lips on mine. I got to sleep next to him. I was the last person he was with.
That was a smoking gun for first-degree murder.
Police head to the hospital to question Jennifer about the email. They find her nearly incapacitated.
When I first met Jennifer, it was a moment I'll never forget in my life. She was under police supervision, but had yet to be arrested because she was still in a medically induced coma. We had to shake Jennifer out of her coma. The first words she said were, do not resuscitate. And she said it in a way that it shook me to my core.
But Jennifer does regain consciousness, and she's ready to talk. Jennifer tells her attorneys that morning she tried to confront Fred about Danielle.
Fred.
But according to Jennifer, Fred refused to talk. So she resorted to a desperate act to get his attention.
I know you're cheating on me.
She just gotten to the breaking point at that time. She gets a knife and comes in and holds it up to her chest and says, what's the best way to kill myself?
Isn't that what you want?
Fred didn't stop her, Jennifer says. Instead, he coached her on how to do it.
She says, is this the right way to kill myself by cutting my wrist? And he showed her to do it lengthwise, not crossways.
You want to kill yourself?
Yes.
And she said, is this the right place in my chest to kill myself? And he said, lower.
Maybe I should stab myself in the heart.
Let me help you.
She wanted him to say, I love you, don't do this. And instead, what Fred told her was, I've got a knife for you. The military knife that they kept in the bedside drawer, it's a murder weapon. And that's when events spiraled out of control.
They started wrestling for the knife, according to her. And then, Jennifer claims, she blacked out and has no idea how either she or Fred were stabbed. But to investigators, Jennifer's claims seem implausible. Jennifer has no wounds on her back, and the cuts, although numerous enough to cause extensive bleeding, don't have the depth that Fred suffered. Despite the fact that two bloody knives were found at the scene, the investigators believe that Jennifer murdered Fred in cold blood.
The police detectives thought it was a more calculating decision, that she had planned everything out. Jennifer had stabbed Fred and then stabbed herself.
The day after the deadly fight, police return to Jennifer's bedside.
She was actually arraigned in her hospital bed, charged with murder.
January 23rd, 2012, downtown San Diego. Jennifer's dramatic trial begins. The 2 years awaiting this day in jail have altered the accused widow's appearance.
She looked very thin.
Prosecutors believe they have a strong case based on the printouts Jennifer left behind. The emails between Fred and Danielle become incriminating.
Prosecutors pointed to the information contained in the manila envelope as evidence of motive. This showed why Jennifer would have killed her husband.
You were successful at ending his life, weren't you?
Yes, I guess so.
You guess so?
I didn't do it on purpose. I was just so angry.
But the highlight of the trial comes a few days later when prosecutors call their star witness, Danielle.
Everyone was waiting for this moment because Jennifer and Danielle had really never seen each other.
Jennifer tensed up. It was a horrible situation to be a part of. There was a huge cloud in the room. Could cut the tension with a knife.
Danielle describes the email Jennifer sent her on that fateful morning. It ended with, you will never have my husband, and tells Danielle to hang on to the memories.
He definitely said that there were issues and that he'd been unhappy for a long time.
After Danielle's chilling testimony, the prosecution rests. For the defense, the argument is simple. They don't deny that Jennifer inflicted the stab wounds. Instead, they question her mental state when it happened.
The defense argued throughout the trial that this was not a premeditated killing. This was, in fact, a heat of passion situation. Sometime during this tension, she grabbed a kitchen knife, and her intention, she said, was to kill herself.
I am sure that Jennifer was feeling suicidal, but she also had the hope that her husband would save her.
After just 3 days of deliberation, the jury delivers its verdict. Jennifer is convicted of second-degree murder.
The jury thought, okay, there was enough heat of passion that it wasn't first degree and came back with a second-degree murder verdict.
Jennifer's reaction was stoic.
For neighbors and friends in San Diego, the story of Jennifer and Fred Trayers leaves nothing but heartbreak in its wake. Universally loved, Fred's only crime was cheating. Though he was playing with fire, a violent and early death strikes everyone as tragic.
It's just all seems so unnecessary. You end up with, you know, dozens of stab wounds and blood everywhere and death and tragedy and devastation for everyone involved.
Jennifer was not a whole person. She wasn't a well person. If she couldn't have Fred, then no one could.
I thought I was gonna kill myself, and I thought that he would be so upset that I wasn't around that he wouldn't be able to be with anybody else.
Thank you.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.